These weren't philosophers in marble halls. These were tradesmen. They were the leather apron crowd. A printer, a glazier, a shoemaker, a cabinet maker. Average guys intent on having extraordinary conversations. This little Friday night discussion club, limited to 12 members, would go on to create America's first volunteer fire company, first lending library, first public hospital, and the institution that became the University of Pennsylvania.
Albert Einstein said, "Don't think about why you question, simply don't stop questioning." Welcome to Curated Questions. I am your host, Ken Woodward. And these questions are not mathematical equations, but rather a resource to encounter personal reflection and growth. As Tupac Shakur stated, even the genius asks questions. Now, let's engage the questioning community.
Picture this. It's Friday evening in 1727, Philadelphia, American colonies. A 21-year-old printer named Benjamin Franklin throws the bolt to lock his shop and walks to a tavern where a few select men are gathering. There's Hugh, a Welsh farmer turned printer who drinks too much. William, a young merchant's clerk with impeccable morals. Thomas, a glazier who installs glass into windows and doors, and in his spare time, a mathematician who demands precision in everything, honestly, sometimes to the point of annoyance. Joseph, a scrivener, a professional writer of official documents, who loves poetry and conducts strange experiments printing images of leaves. The tavern floorboards creak and moan as the friends and businessmen bring their pints of ale to the table and settle into their chairs. They call themselves the Junto, from the Spanish word meaning together, and they're about to spend their evening asking each other questions, and not just any questions. 24 carefully crafted questions that Franklin had designed. Questions like, "Have you lately observed any encroachment on the just liberties of the people?" And, "Do you know of any deserving young beginner, lately set up, whom it lies in the power of the Junto to any way encourage?" These weren't philosophers in marble halls. These were tradesmen. They were the leather apron crowd. A printer, a glazier, a shoemaker, a cabinet maker. Average guys intent on having extraordinary conversations. While the wealthy elites had enjoyed their salons, working-class men creating institutions that rivaled those at elite universities was unheard of. Here's what's remarkable. This little Friday night discussion club, limited to 12 members, would go on to create America's first volunteer fire company, first lending library, first public hospital, and the institution that became the University of Pennsylvania. Moreover, it would run for 38 years and train a generation of Philadelphia's civic leaders in the art of productive disagreement. Franklin later called it the best school of philosophy, morality, and politics that then existed in the province. Not Harvard, not Yale, a discussion group that started in a tavern. What if I told you that one antidote to our fractured discourse was invented in a Philadelphia tavern 300 years ago? Let's start with who Franklin was at the age of 21, barely old enough to legally drink alcohol today. He wasn't yet the lightning rod inventing, diplomacy-wielding founding father we know. He was an ambitious young man in a new city, trying to make his way as a printer. He had left Boston under challenging circumstances, spent an eye-opening year in London, and now found himself back in Philadelphia again. But Franklin had one crucial advantage. He was a voracious reader, and he had been deeply influenced by a book called Essays to Do Good by Cotton Mather. Mather had proposed that small groups of people could band together for mutual improvement and community benefit. Franklin took this idea and did something revolutionary. He made it systematic. he gathered what he called his ingenious acquaintance, interesting people from different ages, trades, and backgrounds. But here's the key. He didn't just want to chat. He wanted to create something powerful, a structured format of intellectual conversation among working people. The rules Franklin drew up were deceptively simple, but radically different from anything being done at the time. Each member would take turns bringing questions on morals, politics, or natural philosophy. Once every 3 months, members would write and present essays. But here's where it gets interesting. Debates were to be conducted, quote, in the sincere spirit of inquiry after truth, without fondness for dispute or desire of victory. Think about that phrase. Without fondness for dispute or desire of victory. This wasn't a debate club. This wasn't about winning arguments. No doubt the scratching of quills to take notes and prepare essays would become the mainstay, as the need to deliver deep reflection and clear insights for the next Friday meeting was the expectation. Franklin went even further. He banned what he called expressions of positiveness, words like certainly or undoubtedly. Instead, members had to say things like, I conceive, or it appears to me, or I imagine it to be so. He intentionally rewired how members were allowed to speak to each other. And if you violated those rules, minor financial penalties were charged, and the clink of coins would fill the room. Franklin understood that changing conversational habits requires external enforcement until new habits form. This collaborative intellectual investigation was built on a shared vision and camaraderie that included a playful side. Members recited silly poems, sang songs, played the flute rather drunkenly, and even gave each other nicknames such as Bargos for Franklin. Laughter and banter must have filled the room regularly. But the real genius was in the questions themselves. Franklin created 24 questions that members would work through each meeting. These weren't random conversation starters. They were carefully designed to move from personal development to community observation to civic action. Which brings us to our first question for you that would be presented in the warmth of candlelight reflected across those gathered. Have you met with anything in the author you last read, remarkable or suitable, to be communicated to the junto? Notice how Franklin starts with individual learning, but immediately asks you to share it with the group. Personal growth in service of collective wisdom. Now, let's dig into those 24 questions, because they reveal something profound about how Franklin was training himself and these other men to think. I've organized them into four themes that show a clear progression. Personal and intellectual growth, community and social awareness, civic engagement and justice, and mutual support and collaboration. First up, personal and intellectual growth. Questions like, what unhappy effects of intemperance have you lately observed or heard? Of imprudence? Of passion? Or any other vice or folly? And its companion, what happy effects of temperance, of prudence, of moderation, or any other virtue have you observed? Notice what Franklin is doing here. He's not asking for abstract moral philosophy. He's asking for observations, like real examples, evidence from daily life. He's training these men to be systematic observers of human behavior, starting with their own experience. Which leads us to our second theme, community and social awareness. Have you lately heard of any citizens thriving well, and by what means? Have you lately heard how any present rich man, here or elsewhere, got his estate? These questions turn members into intelligence gatherers about their community's economic and social patterns. But notice, Franklin isn't encouraging gossip. He's encouraging systematic observation of what works and what doesn't in their society. Here's a question for you to consider. Do you know of any fellow citizen who has lately done a worthy action, deserving praise and imitation, or who has committed an error proper for us to be warned against and avoid? See what's happening? Franklin is creating a feedback loop that enables the community to learn from both its successes and failures. This is a civic education disguised as conversation. But Franklin doesn't stop at observation. The third theme is civic engagement and justice. Have you lately observed any defect in the laws of your country of which it would be proper to move the legislature an amendment? Have you lately observed any encroachment on the just liberties of the people? Think about this. By virtue of the junto, Franklin is training artisans and merchants to think like citizens, to observe their government critically, and to take responsibility for political improvement. Remember, this is 1727, 50 years before the Declaration of Independence. And here's one that should make us uncomfortable today. Hath anybody attacked your reputation lately? And what can the junto do towards securing it? Franklin understood that in a society where reputation matters, protecting each other's good name is essential for civic trust. The group becomes a shield against character assassination. Finally, mutual support and collaboration. Have you any weighty affair in hand in which you think the advice of the junto may be of service? In what manner can the junto, or any of them, assist you in any of your honorable designs? These questions institutionalize mutual aid, but notice the word honorable, not just any designs. The group will help you succeed, but only in ventures that serve the common good. What Franklin created was a systemic method for turning individual ambition into collective flourishing, personal development that serves community development. Self-interest is aligned with public interest. This public interest was epitomized when the junto founded the Library Company of Philadelphia. The predominantly working-class group had minimal access to books and decided to pool their available resources to purchase and borrow books collectively. The junto became the founding members of the subscription library, providing an opportunity for a broader audience to access knowledge within its pages. Here's a question for you. What benefits have you lately received from any man not present? This one always challenges me. Franklin is teaching gratitude, but also reciprocity. You're keeping track of how others help so you can pay it forward. It's social capitalism, building trust and obligation networks that strengthen the whole community. This practice of tracking mutual benefit resonates deeply with me. Had I been a part of my own junto over the past several years, it would have been far easier to adopt my new identities and discard the old. I found myself barely hanging onto the perimeter of groups I had formerly helped lead, but proved too rigid for intellectual exploration and change. Now, here's where the story gets both inspiring and heartbreaking, because we can actually see what happened when Franklin's system started to break down. In 1757, Franklin left Philadelphia to represent Pennsylvania in London. He had been gone for years, and his close friend, Hugh Roberts, another junto member, wrote him letters that reveal something crucial about what made the group work. Roberts wrote, "I cannot give any particular account of the old junto, for I have not been there since thy departure, nor is it agreeable to meet where one must be under a continued restraint. For what I might call reason grounded on freedom, would be deemed petulance or a turbulent disposition." Do you hear what happened? Without Franklin's facilitation, the group lost what Roberts called reason grounded on freedom. The conversations became politically constrained. What had once been a collaborative investigation became careful orthodoxy. This tells us something profound. The junto's magic wasn't just in the questions or the rules. It was in creating a specific cultural container where intellectual risk-taking felt safe. And this points to what we've lost. We've lost relief from the art of intellectual loneliness. We're drowning in information about people, but starving for actual understanding of them. They had to look each other in the eye when they disagreed. We can block, mute, and unfriend. Think about it. We have infinite access to what people think, but almost no practice in how to think together. We know more about our neighbors' political opinions than ever before, but we've lost the ability to explore complex questions with people who disagree with us. Let's be, well, frank. Modernity offers significant obstacles to prevent us from engaging in a Gento solution. The paradox of choice means that in urban areas, I have too many choices to choose from, and therefore, I choose none. The fear of vulnerability in our performance culture means there is little room to open up and test ideas and at the edges of new thoughts without the uncertainty of our early thoughts being exposed on social media. Constant distraction makes it hard to sustain commitment over the long haul and may hinder fulfillment of the promised benefits of long-term relationships. Our Facebook memories remind us of book clubs that fizzled or debate societies that became combative. The Gento solved this through what I call structured curiosity. The questions created a framework for disagreement that built rather than destroyed relationships. Franklin understood something we've forgotten. Good conversation is a skill that requires practice and structure. But here's the crucial insight. Different tools, exact human needs. The Gento members had to create an intellectual community from scratch in a small city. We must create it intentionally, despite having an infinite number of options. They had limited information and had to rely on each other for knowledge. We have an abundance of information and a need to learn to rely on one another for wisdom. They couldn't retreat to like-minded bubbles because they needed to stay connected with their neighbors. The ever-present smell of pipe tobacco and ale from the local tavern were indicative of living in a close community. We can default to our bubbles, but we must resist the temptation. They knew everyone in their small city. While we are connected to millions, we'll never meet. But the human need for meaningful conversation with people who challenge us, that's exactly the same. Franklin's questions worked because they were designed around a simple insight. Personal growth and civic engagement require the same conversational skill. You can't become a better person in isolation, and you can't build a better community without better people. Here's a question Franklin would ask. Is there any difficulty in matters of opinion, of justice, and injustice, which you would gladly have discussed at this time? I mean, when's the last time someone asked you a similar question? When's the last time you felt safe enough to really explore a moral complexity with people you might disagree with? So, how do we reclaim this lost art? How do we rebuild the capacity for productive disagreement in our polarized world? The beautiful thing about Franklin's invention is that it's completely replicable. You don't need special credentials or institutional support. You just need Franklin's insight. Regular intellectual engagement with a community of questions and others fosters personal and collective connection that we can translate into positive action. Here's what that looks like practically. First, start with the right people. Franklin chose individuals he called ingenious, from diverse backgrounds, not necessarily the most educated, but rather the most curious. People who shared a spirit of inquiry and deep desire to improve themselves, their community, and to help others. Second, commit to the structure. Meet regularly. Franklin chose Friday evenings. Create rules to prioritize inquiry over victory. Ban certainty language. Make it safe to change your mind. Third, use questions that matter. Franklin's questions work because they connect personal development to civic engagement. They assume that working on yourself and working on your community are one and the same project. Here, I've updated some of Franklin's questions to modern language. Have you encountered any information recently that changed how you think about an important issue? What examples of good citizenship have you witnessed lately that others might want to emulate? What problems in your community do you think could be solved by people working together? How has someone outside this group helped you recently, and how might you pay that forward? What's a question about justice or community well-being that you've been wrestling with that this group might help you think through? However, Franklin's most important insight is that the goal isn't to solve problems through discussion. The goal is to develop people who can solve problems through action. The Junto didn't just talk about the need for a public library, they created one. They didn't just discuss fire safety, they formed the first volunteer fire company. They didn't just debate education, they laid the groundwork that founded a school which became the University of Pennsylvania. The conversation was preparation for citizenship. Franklin had a phrase for this. He said the Junto was training people to become, quote, lovers of truth for truth's sake, who would endeavor impartially to find and receive it yourself and communicate it to others. Truth for truth's sake, not truth for victory's sake, not truth for the party's sake, but truth for truth's sake. And here's our final question that is quite timely, straight from Franklin. Do you see anything amiss in the present customs or proceedings of our democracy which might be amended? The Junto lasted 38 years. It trained generations of Philadelphia's civic leaders. It proved that ordinary people asking good questions in good faith can build extraordinary communities. The Junto worked because it combined three elements that most modern groups separate: personal development, or self-help groups, civic engagement, political organizations, and social connection, friend groups. Franklin understood these couldn't be divorced from each other. The questions are still there, waiting for us. The model still works. The only question is, are we brave enough to try it? Ultimately, Franklin's great discovery wasn't about lightning, diplomacy, or even democracy. It was about conversation. He discovered that the right questions, asked by the right people, in the right spirit, can change the world. Franklin's later diplomatic style, characterized by patient inquiry and finding common ground, was shaped by decades of Junto practice. The sharp staccato clicks of horseshoes on cobblestones have become the siren hum of electric cars. But the human hunger for meaning, for community, for the chance to grow alongside people who challenge and support us, that's exactly the same. America's original mastermind group is waiting for us to remember how it worked. Regular intellectual engagement with a community of questions and others fosters personal and collective connections that can translate into positive action. That was Franklin's insight at the age of 21. It's still true today, 300 years later. The questions are timeless. The need is urgent. The choice is ours. What questions will you bring to your own Junto? A key element of the Junto was a call to action. Speaking across three centuries, the Junto challenge is delivered to you. Start this Friday. Find three curious people. Ask one question from Franklin's list. And let's see what happens. Thank you for joining me for this journey through one of my hero's most significant accomplishments. To those on the other side of the speaker, thank you for being here. Gratitude shout out to Beauty Pill for the show's music and to producer Ben Ford for the technical assistance. This episode was recorded on Piscataway land. Please engage with this episode in some manner. Download, follow, save, like, share, or comment about something that resonated. This action ensures we are engaging the questioning community. Until next time, keep questioning.